Welcome to the Swiss Info Podcast, a roundup of the biggest stories from this week in Switzerland, plus the business and cultural highlights.
Thank you for downloading this special edition podcast. Journalists of Swiss Info's English department tell us about the stories they remember most from what was a very eventful year. 2007 started with the warmest winter on record and ended with an icy wind blowing through the halls of Parliament.
Blocher's speech to Parliament, full of anger, bitterness, and dark threats of revenge.
The voting out of the cabinet of Christoph Blocher in mid-December was nearly unthinkable 12 months earlier. At the start of the year, all eyes were focused on the Swissair trial. 19 former executives of the defunct airline, the once proud Swiss flagship, faced an array of charges, including damaging creditors and mismanagement. In February, the National Weather Service announced that the winter was the warmest on record, with average temperatures in Swiss cities of between 4 and 5 degrees. March also saw a thaw, this time in relations between animal rights groups and the authorities of the city of Bern. The town council announced it would build a 6,500 square meter park for its captive bears, which for centuries have been confined to a small pit in the old town. It was the kind of good news Morven McLean likes to hear.
A lot of people have complained and found it really sort of unpleasant, you know, looking at the animals with no space really to move around. And the idea is that that will be extended, that they will have a sort of free range over part of the riverbank, and they'll be able to even swim in the river, catch their own fish. And it doesn't sound like a big deal, but if you consider that the bear is the emblem of Bern and that there have been bears kept here for hundreds of years, it's important that now finally animal rights are being taken seriously and the animals are being given more space.
For Kathleen Ashleyman, the spring was a season of discontent. She was disappointed by voters' rejection of a plan to introduce a single health insurance company. Kathleen thinks it would have made health insurance much more affordable. But as she admits, she was among the minority.
I think it would have reduced health costs, yes. Switzerland's very expensive, the highest health insurance costs in Europe. Part of the vote stated that premiums would be based on income and wealth, and I think people were concerned that they would have to pay even more than they're paying now. So that may have helped kill it.
April saw Parliament take a first step to reducing the high number of deaths involving army-issue guns. It voted to end the practice of allowing members of the country's militia army to store ammunition at home. Simon Bradley covered the story throughout the year. It reached a fever pitch in November when a 16-year-old girl was killed in a random shooting by a man who had just completed basic training.
The gun law traditions are very strongly rooted in Switzerland. I talked to a gun shop owner who said that he thought that some 20 million guns were in circulation, and shooting clubs are extremely popular here. And in Parliament, the gun lobby is very, very powerful, but also aging. And I think the younger generation, they're not so interested in guns. A survey said 2/3 of people would like to have guns banned from households. So I think there's a momentum, there's an initiative also. So I think over the next few months and years, this momentum will be an interesting one to follow. It brings to light all these differences between generations and traditions, which I find so interesting.
The right-wing Swiss People's Party grabbed many of the headlines in 2007. In May, it targeted Switzerland's Muslim communities by announcing it would start collecting signatures to force a nationwide vote to ban the construction of minarets. For Julie Hunt, this was just the start of many controversial moves by the right-wing group.
First of all, we had the move to ban the building of minarets, and signatures are still being collected for an initiative on that. And also the Black Sheep campaign, which caused an international outcry when the SVP, the People's Party, launched a campaign to expel families of immigrants where the immigrant had committed some kind of offence. And to support their campaign, they had a poster which showed a white sheep kicking a black sheep.
The verdict in the Swissair trial was announced in June, and to the surprise of observers, all 19 executives were acquitted of the charges. High-flying Swiss tennis star Roger Federer was temporarily grounded in June by Rafael Nadal at the French Open. The Swiss Info journalist who most closely followed Federer's fortunes was Thomas Stevens.
The reason it's so memorable for me is we had such high hopes. He was going for the Grand Slam, second year in a row. 2005, he got to the semis. 2006, he got to the final. This was meant to be his year. As it turned out, it was real car crash television. He just choked. He had 17 break points. He converted one of them. He's playing brilliantly for the rest of the year. It's just this one match that he... congratulations to get the final. It's just this one match that that it all went a bit pear-shaped for him.
Sports remained high on Switzerland's agenda in July when the Swiss yachting syndicate Alinghi successfully defended the America's Cup by beating Team New Zealand in a thrilling final off the Spanish coast. But more than the victory, Scott Capper remembers the legal duel between Alinghi and Oracle Racing over the Cup's future.
The announcement of new rules, of changes in the format of the America's Cup has caused all kinds of disturbances, court cases, and complaints from challengers. The idea was to make it more spectator-friendly, more TV-friendly, and to a large extent. The problem, of course, in doing so is that a lot of people have suddenly got the feeling that the marketing men are taking over the competition, even though you could very well say, well, but before that, it was a competition for rich boys with lots of money to throw away. The complaints that are being made are often being made by people who are very wealthy and perhaps a little bit disturbed that their boys' club has been taken over by the masses.
There was also tragedy in July when six soldiers were killed climbing the Jungfrau Mountain, ignoring warnings of the high risk of avalanches after heavy summer snowfall. Gillian Spinden remembers seeing the first reports come in.
I was particularly worried because I knew on the day when the reports started coming through in the morning that a colleague of mine, a journalist from this establishment, was planning to climb the Jungfraujoch, and I was very frightened that he could have been on the mountain when the avalanche happened. At the beginning, we didn't know how many people were involved, and we didn't know that it was, in fact, a group from the Swiss Army that had been caught in this avalanche. I was really worried that somebody I knew was in the avalanche and had died, so I tried to phone him straight away, and he didn't answer.
On the last day of July, a 5-year-old girl was abducted in Canton St. Gallen. Her body was found several weeks later. Elenia was the victim of a 67-year-old Swiss man who committed suicide shortly after killing her. The abduction made the headlines because cases of missing children and child murders are rare in Switzerland. Here's Raffaella Rossello.
Being myself a mother of a young child, you know, I'm very sensitive to these things, and especially the fact that in Switzerland, children are relatively free to move about without constant surveillance from their parents. And so this was also the case with this little girl who went back to the swimming pool to get a shampoo by herself. And this is something that people do here because they don't feel threatened.
It was the various controversies surrounding the Swiss People's Party which also stood out this year for Isabel Leibold Johnson. By September, the Black Sheep campaign had been condemned by the United Nations and caught the attention of the foreign press. But at home, it helped the right-wing party win votes in October's parliamentary elections.
And there the People's Party did really well. They did the best, actually. They got almost 30% of the vote, the best ever. They were terribly pleased with themselves. And, well, until we came to December, when we had the cabinet elections, and there the tide turned for the People's Party. Everyone expected the 7-member, 4-party cabinet to be elected back as normal, that everyone would get back into government, all the ministers, but it was not to be.
Let's return to October, which was a turbulent month for banks around the world, including Switzerland's biggest financial institution, UBS. As a result of the U.S. subprime mortgage crisis, the bank announced a third quarter loss and followed that up in December when it said it had to write down a further $10 billion. Matt Allen closely followed the story.
Now that's a surprise because UBS is traditionally seen as a risk-adverse, conservative bank. On the other side of the coin, it's interesting to see how few other Swiss financial institutions got dragged into this whole mess. Credit Suisse for sure took some hits, but it's still posting a profit. It's odd to see computer mouse manufacturers and Logitech also got their fingers burnt. But we still don't know the size of the bad investment and who's got them, so we'll find a lot out next year. There's three questions remaining. How much of this was down to judgment? How much of this was down to blind luck, and how long will UBS chairman Marcel Ospel stay in his post?
Claire O'Dea takes us back to the world of sport and the shock announcement in November by the one-time darling of women's tennis, Switzerland's Martina Hingis, that she was under suspicion of using cocaine at Wimbledon earlier in the year.
She has a kind of a little girl next door image, and it was the way it was done. I mean, it did seem likely that she would announce a second retirement because she did have other problems with injuries. But the way it was done, it was completely unexpected, and it was very dramatic, and she was really emotional when she was talking about it, and she was fighting back the tears, and you know, it was just a real human story.
The end of the first week of December is the time each year reserved for the introduction of a new railway timetable. For train-loving Switzerland and Swissinfo's Robert Brooks, there was much to celebrate this year, since it coincided with the opening of the 35-kilometer-long high-speed rail tunnel known as the Lutschberg.
I'm not a train spotter at all. I don't even wear an anorak. What I can say is that I love train travel and I love saving time so I can be in Canton Valley to enjoy the walks I do down there. But that's just very subjective. Being objective, this will save incredible amount of time that you can save going from southern Germany down through to Italy, an hour or so. Yes, sure, this thing is 4 billion francs. It swallowed that much, but it's exciting. It saves time. And it also has the environment in mind. And I think if you take all that into consideration, yes, chapeau, it's a great achievement.
But the tunnel's opening was quickly overshadowed by politics. As we already heard from Isabel Leibold Johnson, the normally predictable re-election of cabinet ministers turned into a political thriller. Urs Geiser picks up the story.
The cabinet elections and Parliament's refusal to re-elect Switzerland's arguably most controversial minister, Christoph Blocher, was no doubt the biggest upset on the political stage this year. Hard to forget the faces of consternation among his supporters or the opponents jumping off their seats. And then Blocher's speech to Parliament, full of anger, bitterness, and dark threats of revenge.
For Christoph Giovannini, an unpredictable climate was what marked 2007 for him.
I would remember two things, like the weather. I have a very nice memory of warm spring, autumn, sometimes too hot summer. I forgot the rainy days because one forgets the bad things. But then I have to remember that it's the context, which is the climate. When is it going to be too late to notice that those changes are dangerous? The other thing is the amazing concentration of art and art exhibition in this country. There's a density, it's a luxury. Dozens of great exhibitions which follow through the whole year, and lots of moments of joy.
We at Swiss Info hope to report on many moments of joy in 2008. And there's plenty of information on swissinfo.ch of the 2007 stories you've just heard. And that's also where you can give us your opinion on our audio service. Thanks for listening to the Swiss Info podcast. I'm Dale Bechtel.